The Democratic Party just wrapped up their convention in Chicago, and the Vibes campaign continued. Tim Walz and Kamala Harris accepted their party's nominations, while a mobile abortion unit was set up outside, along with the pro-Hamas wing, chanting, "We'll bring the war home," while burning American flags. We'll discuss freedom and liberty today on the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Welcome into the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's this one. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show. It is Friday, August the 23rd in the year of our Lord, 2024. And we are here. Thank you, sir. We are multi-locations today. I think, Mitch, Randy, are you guys flying back from Chicago? Were you guys at the convention, or how'd that work out?
No, we are firmly planted here in South Carolina, sir.
If you could pick the furthest point away from Chicago, that's where I am.
It's fair. A lot to get into today. The Democratic National Convention wraps up last night. It was a four-day boondoggle of celebrities, and there were rumors last night that Beyonce might have made an appearance or Taylor Swift might have been in attendance. Neither of those panned out. And actually, Governor Roy Cooper was the penultimate speaker, so a bit of a a step down there. But a lot to get into from the Democratic Convention. And of course, we want to remind you that if you want to be involved in Palmetto Family's work, go to palmettofamily.org today. Get signed up for our email newsletters. Get signed up for all of our communications. And then, of course, if you are interested in supporting our work, you can do that. Click that little donate button at the top. Let's dive in, guys. Obviously, a lot has changed over the course of the last month and a half. In fact, so much has changed in our political landscape that many people have forgotten that the nominee for president on the Republican side was actually shot at a campaign event. That's so far memory hold now in this campaign. Since then, the sitting president, who did give a speech on Monday that we will get to, the sitting president was basically politically shivved and is now off the scene completely, and his vice president has officially accepted the nomination for president of the United States. And Mitch, I guess we'll start here. As we move into late August, because we're now officially in late August, college football season's about to start. We'll get into the fall and everything that comes with it. Election day is close. What is your take on the race now compared to where it was, say, you know, July 13th?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think this is quite the Georgia Tech, Florida State matchup in Ireland tomorrow. If you're listening to this on Saturday, turn on your TV. There's college football on. I don't think this is quite that matchup anymore. As you pointed out at the top, a lot has been forgotten by the numbers. In case anybody's wondering, Kamala Harris has not won a single primary vote or delegate in 2020 or 2024, for that matter. So the electoral math is tight. I'm seeing some math that is so close it's concerning. I think the biggest thing for people to remember is that all elections are about turnout. And so if you want your candidate, whether it's Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, to win, you have to go vote and you need to get your friends out to vote. And we encourage you to vote for biblical values.
Randy, you have some experience when it comes to elections, just some. When you're looking at this situation that both the Trump campaign and the Harris-Walz campaign find themselves in, it seems like they're both competing for the same audience, which is interesting because Kamala Harris's voting record in the Senate, in her year and a half she was in the Senate, or however long it was before she announced her run for president in 2019, was left of Bernie Sanders, according to every single wage. But they're both competing for the moderates in the middle while also appealing to their base. which makes this a very confusing election because Kamala is running as the prosecutor president, yet her party typically doesn't go for the law and order stuff. And Donald Trump is competing for the moderates on the Republican side, which would be more middle, therefore alienating the more pro-life side of his party, amongst other things as well. So how do we get a gauge on that here is now both conventions are over and we're barreling our way toward the first debate between these two.
Yeah, it's actually been very interesting, you know, to watch. I think, you know, when you look at the combined time of July and August, we truly had a century in political history wrapped up in about 60 days. So much happened and so much changed. You know, I think that, you know, following the assassination attempt in Pennsylvania, you know, many on the right thought that, you know, Trump was going to, you know, just ride to a huge, huge win. Then you had Biden step out and then Harris come in. And, you know, I've never seen anything quite like the Kamala Harris coronation. That's, you know, probably the easiest word I can find for it. But it's just been really interesting to watch. And you know, as you look at both parties, you know, with their platforms, where they've gone this year, you know, that they really are, you know, going straight to the middle, or, you know, even slightly left or really left, depending on which party it is. It's they're going to be interesting to see what really happens, because ultimately, you know, I think most observers believe it's going to come down to seven states. And those seven states, you know, whether it's Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, or Wisconsin, those seven states really are going to determine who the next president of the United States is. And, you know, obviously, as Mitch has said, turnout is key. You've got to make sure that your supporters get out and vote. And not only is it key for the presidential race, but also for down ballot races. I mean, so many states, you've got, you know, U.S. Senate, governor, you know, state Senate, state House. So it's really important to get out there and vote all the way down, and to make sure that your values are represented in your state house and Congress or at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Randy, you brought up something that it's very interesting. If you study political theory at all, the question is always, whom are we trying to persuade to vote for us? And it seems like for at least the Trump it's been a poll game. In other words, the right goes further right and the left goes further left to pick up votes. In other words, it's a base turnout. You're just trying to turn out your base. You mentioned that it's a play to the middle or it's a play to the left. Kamala Harris certainly, well, I shouldn't say certainly, most likely the most leftist candidate in the history of electoral politics in America. Donald Trump's also played to the left, which some would argue is the middle. What do you make of that?
It's really been weird, especially when you look at, you know, the party platforms and kind of what they're talking about. You know, you had the Democratic Party, which, you know, for years has kind of cast itself as a pro-choice party, and now they're very solidly not just a quote pro-choice party, but a pro-abortion party. And then you had the Republican Party go from being a very pro-life party to now we're just against late-term abortions. You know, we're silent on marriage. And then, you know, when it comes to, you know, transgender surgery on minors, we seem to only oppose it if it's taxpayer funded. And so it's just really a lot of weird things out there that we haven't really seen before. And it's truly going to be a game changer of an election, no matter which way it goes.
There's no question about that. And we'll get into Kamala Harris's acceptance speech, which again was 37 minutes long, about a third the length of Donald Trump's acceptance speech at the convention in Milwaukee. But I just want to mention a little bit more about the attitudes surrounding the convention. For weeks, we have heard about they're the vibes. It's the vibes. It's joy. It's enthusiasm. I think that's a way to cover up for the laugh. But however that stands, you felt that going in.
I do
the same way I like the Joker's laugh. It as we move into this convention, the cavalcade of speakers. We had on night one, we talk about moving forward, but also paying homage to Joe Biden. It was a very interesting night, night one. It almost felt like a political funeral. And then he gave his own eulogy. It was very strange. Hillary Clinton spoke on night one. Talk about moving forward. Night number two, you had former President Obama and his wife, Michelle. Former President Bill Clinton also spoke, mispronounced Kamala's name. Oprah Winfrey spoke on one of these nights as well. Not going to go there, not going to tread that ground anymore. And then on Thursday, of course, oh, but Wednesday night, you also had Tim Walz accepting the nomination for vice president. And then last night, you had Governor Josh Shapiro speaking, amongst others, throughout the evening. But what was happening in the room and then outside the room, I just want to make a point on. We mentioned it off the top that you had a mobile abortion and vasectomy health unit outside. Then you had a gumball machine that was dispensing Plan B for free. You had pregnancy tests. There was, I can't even read that on the air. There was a boxing corner for people who find themselves to be just really, really strong feminist women. A feminist mini golf and abortion access skee ball. There was also, upon entrance, a wall of weirdos with pictures of J.D. Vance, Amy Coney Barrett, Donald Trump, his two sons, Marco Rubio, Speaker Mike Johnson, Jim Jordan, amongst others. Next to that, and this is a quote from the wall. You'll never hear this phrase again on this show. There was, so you had the wall of weirdos and the hall of hotties. That included Governor Tim Walz, Kamala Harris. They were joined by Doug Emhoff, Joe Biden, Stacey Abrams, Jason Kelsey, Ariana Grande, Nancy Pelosi, and Olivia Rodrigo. Don't know what that's about. It's just kind of confused. But that's what was happening in the room. And so what we're seeing here is this idea of a vibes campaign. Because Kamala Harris's speech, that's what's going on around it. Now we have this woman. And let me just explain something to everyone real quick. Let's catch us up. The person who accepted the Democratic nomination for President of the United States in the year of our Lord, 2024, served as the California Attorney General for less than a full term, then ran for the California Senate, won that seat up against another Democrat, and only served for like 2 years before she announced she was running for president. So it doesn't make any sense to me. Then she is plucked from obscurity because she didn't get a single vote. She dropped out before the primaries began in 2019/2020. Then she's plucked out of obscurity and political just darkness by Joe Biden to be his vice president, put in charge of some of the worst jobs in the world, the border, AI, all these other things. By the way, AI, two letters, it means artificial intelligence. And then, so she's vice president for 3 years. Joe Biden does a debate, crash and burn. The whole party, Nancy Pelosi, the leader, says, gotta get him out. Gotta get him out. So they get him out. Naturally, here's Kamala, who, outside of the Brett Kavanaugh hearing, I'm not really sure what she's known for in the Senate. She accepts the nomination. And immediately, really quickly, gentlemen, what do we think the three main topics of quote unquote policy were for the sitting vice president and quite possibly the future president of the United States? If you had to pick three, Mitch, safety, I'll give you first go.
Safety and national security.
Okay. Randy, you got a guess?
You would think the economy, inflation?
Well, I will tell you that she really did a good job initially of telling her story, because to be fair, not a lot of people know who Kamala Harris is. We do. We deal with this every day. And if you're politically engaged, you know who Kamala Harris is. But for the wide swath of people, they don't know who Kamala is. And so she talks about her upbringing in a wonderful working class neighborhood and all of these different things. And then she starts to talk, and her number one issue, aside from just Donald Trump himself, who is just an unserious person, is abortion. And She claims that Donald Trump, quote, plans to create a national anti-abortion coordinator and force states to report on women's miscarriages and abortions whilst instituting a national ban on abortion. Now, we come from the family policy side of this. I would argue that many people have qualms on the right with Donald Trump's stance on abortion. And yet, she's playing the other side. I find it fascinating. So how does this work between Donald Trump's trying to distance himself from harsher, quote unquote, abortion bans, while Kamala Harris is saying, no, he's leaning into it. By the way, after that was taxes. Donald Trump's going to create a national sales tax. And she said that the Supreme Court ruled that the president can be immune from criminal prosecution.
You have to read the bill before you know what's in it.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's important.
What we have in this case, and I want to get to this. Randy's mentioned this around the office a couple times, and I'm going to steal the line in order to give you the line. What has happened is, and I think we broached this topic earlier, the Democratic Party is no longer pro-choice, they're pro-abortion, and the Republican Party, according to platform, has gone from pro-life to pro-choice. So the abortion issue is almost, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, it certainly does, and it will influence the votes of a lot of pro-lifers in the Republican Party and could change this election. But beyond that, we have issues of economy. We have issues of border security. We have issue of foreign diplomacy. You got two wars. One could start in the East or in the Pacific at any point. When you're looking at these two people and you're looking at the idea of freedom and you're looking at the idea of lessening evil, because I think a lot of people look at this election as they have for what, the last three or four, said, I've got to choose the lesser of two evils. When you're looking at policy, which, by the way, I need to check the website while we talk about this. I'm going to check the website to look for policy. When you're looking at policy and you're looking at campaign promises and you're looking at campaign rhetoric, where do these two campaigns stand on the idea of lessening evil?
Well, I think when it comes to, you know, life, there is a clear difference. And, you know, obviously, in Milwaukee, Planned Parenthood wasn't sitting outside with a, you know, free abortion bus and a free vasectomy bus. It just didn't happen. And I think the vast majority of grassroots Republicans are pro-life, certainly so here in South Carolina. And, you know, we've seen that with the passing of the heartbeat bill and, you know, with the growth of the pregnancy care centers throughout the state. You know, we truly do care about the mother and the child. And I think that's very, very clear among South Carolina Republicans. You know, I think, you know, as you look at, you know, lessening evil and some other things, you know, you have to see, you know, you aren't just electing a president, you're electing cabinet secretaries, you're electing, you know, all kinds of people in the, you know, in the executive branch and in the legislative branch that affect policy. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, probably both Justin and Mitch have heard me say 10 million times are three words that I often say, and they come from my good friend Morton Blackwell: personnel is policy. And so whoever you hire, whoever you put in these particular places, they are affecting policy. They are policy. And so I think that's really one of the big things to look at when you're looking at, you know, how do you lessen evil? Is like, what, who are they hiring? What are their belief systems? What's their worldview? And how does that affect them in the workplace and serving, you know, as in the federal or state government?
And to that point, any proliferation of abortion is not lessening evil. Any.
Correct.
And I'm using that term widely. Any, if you support a legislative option where that's not lessening evil, it's just not. By the way, the Harris, KamalaHarris.com, Mitch, real quick, just clicked on the website. You can meet Kamala, you can meet Tim, you can take action, you can visit their store, or you can donate. There is not a single, we are 70 something days away from an election, and there is not a single policy point on their website. Go ahead.
Yeah, not a thing. I just looked as well. I would go so far as to say that if you are part of the pro-life movement, if you are listening to this right now and you believe that a mother and a child deserve to be protected from the harms of abortion, or if you are an old school Democrat who, you know, for whatever reason, maybe that's who daddy was or mama was, and that's, you're being mocked right now by the Democratic Party. I mean, when we've got skee-ball for abortions, a rolling bus where you can go get an abortion in front of the DNC or a free vasectomy, you can, the wall of hotties, the wall of weirdos, you're being mocked. You, open your eyes. You are being mocked by these people. You'll probably never hear me say this again. I think news is going to be made later on today, Friday, mm-hmm. the 23rd. Maybe we need to take a page out of the Kennedy playbook.
Yeah.
All sources tell us that he is going to choose to lessen evil by choosing to endorse Donald Trump for president. Now, that's not an endorsement from me, okay? But it's clear right now that one side of this and their leadership, whether they're the leaders or not, are mocking you, and the other side is flying through Georgia thanking Brian Kemp for what he's done to make Georgia a great state to live and work and raise a family. So to me right now, the choice is abundantly, immaculately clear for you to make.
And to the point, before we get into some polling and look at some things, I want to mention that in the speech last night, Kamala Harris mentioned Donald Trump 15 times. She mentioned inflation 0 times. She did say she would improve the economy on day one, which is interesting. She's not on day one. She's on day 1,000 and something at this point. You're the vice president and you claim to be in the room when every big decision is made. She tweeted last night, or her staff tweeted last night while she was on stage, "As president, I will grow the economy and I'll lower the cost of everyday needs like healthcare, housing, and groceries." But since she took office, gasoline's up 51%, electricity 32%, airfare up 23%, groceries up 22%, rent is up 22%, eggs are up 47%, car insurance costs are up 54%, and food supplied for K through 12 is up 66%. That's fact. That's legitimate. We call them, we hear it every election, right, Randy? We hear table issues, kitchen table issues. These are literally kitchen table issues. You cannot save for a home when you're paying more for everything else, including your rent, by the way, because you can't save.
Correct.
So correct. I have a hard time, and this is important, I have a hard time hearing from people saying that Donald Trump will be an autocrat and a tyrant on day one when he's in office. He's already been president. I know what it looks like. Same thing for Kamala Harris. You can't avoid this because you wanted to with Joe Biden being out, but you can't because Kamala Harris is innately tied to Joe Biden because she served in his administration. You can't tell me what you would do because I've seen what you do. I've seen it. And obviously, unfettered by a vice president to a presidential seat, you're behind the Resolute desk. It might be even more so. Now, really quickly, we go to polling. Which, again, this is New Mexico to start with. New Mexico, Harris leads by 10, not shocking there. She leads by 1 in North Carolina. Donald Trump is up by 5 in Texas. And Harris is up by 1 in Wisconsin. In a different Nevada poll, Rasmussen has Trump up 2, which is fascinating. In Wisconsin, they're tied. I'm looking for another swing state here. Virginia. Could Virginia be in play? Donald Trump trails by only 3 there. In Pennsylvania, by the way, the governor of Pennsylvania has a 62% approval rating, and he was passed over at the VP nomination. Trump leads by 1, according to a more recent poll there. Trump up by 2 in Arizona. Trump trails by one in Michigan. And in a different poll, Rasmussen, Pennsylvania, Trump by one. And in Ohio, Trump by seven. So it comes down to these swing states, guys. And the key is going to be, does Kamala Harris's message, and for that matter, Tim Walz's message, resonate with voters in Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania? I'm going to go ahead and throw it in. Virginia, North Carolina, and Georgia. That's the key. Does that work? Because Glenn Youngkin is a wildly popular governor in Virginia, and that state could be in play as well. How does North Carolina fall? Is North Carolina back to being a bit more purple? And how does Georgia fall? It appears that Donald Trump and Brian Kemp are sort of burying the hatchet a little bit, as it needs to. Terrible political strategy to go after a popular governor in a red state. This election will be close. I have people ask me a lot here over the last week or so, what do you think? Could Kamala Harris win? And my answer is absolutely she could. Absolutely. We're talking 44,000 votes across these states was the difference in 2020. 73,000 or 77,000, the difference in 2016. I mean, it is razor thin in our electoral politics now. So as we look at the polling, as we wrap up the convention, I'll go to the two people here who are smarter than I. What does each campaign need to do down the stretch to show that they will lessen evil? It doesn't mean they will, but how do they communicate the message of we need to lessen evil, we need to make things more affordable, we need to get back to the quote-unquote American dream? How do they do that in these Rust Belt and swing Southeastern states?
I think for, the Democratic Party, when you look at it, the vice president, her day one was 1,311 days ago. I just Googled that. And so, she's got to make sure that people forget that it was 1,311 days ago and that the Democrats have controlled the White House for 12 of the last 16 years. So, I mean, those are some key things there. Obviously, for them, she did a good job of really kind of introducing herself to the electorate last night. And so they've got to keep her definition of herself out there before Donald Trump is able to tag her with some of these labels and to really tie very unpopular policy to her. For President Trump, his key, I think, is he's just got to stay disciplined on messaging. And, go after policy and just show that there are vast policy differences between him and the vice president. And that's going to be a key to victory. And then ultimately, for both parties, it's turnout and make sure people get out and vote and they vote from top of ticket down. And that's going to make a huge difference, as we march forward to November the 5th. So those are what I think, high level are the keys for both parties.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Randy. I think the only thing I would add to that is instead of preaching joy, because there's nothing like having joy while you squeeze that handle on the gas pump for $3 a gallon gas, or when the 12 pack of Coke now costs $5 instead of $3. Instead of having joy, potentially taking another page out of a guy's playbook from about 32 years ago named Bill Clinton, and saying, he never really said this, but the gist was, I feel your pain. Empathy. Now, it's really hard for the fox that's running the hen house to show empathy. It's like the fox eating all the hen's eggs and saying, just, hey, give me till tomorrow, and I promise I won't eat any more eggs. Tomorrow, everything will be better. I agree with the baby in the background crying, saying, you know what? I need a little more relief here. So empathy on both Donald Trump's part, saying, yeah, it's bad. I know it's bad. You remember just 4 years ago before COVID, when everything was rolling along pretty good? We can get back there. For Kamala Harris, it's, yeah, things haven't quite worked out the way we thought they were going to over the last 4 years. Maybe let's try a few things a little differently and see how that works out for us. Showing empathy, And then all the things that Randy said, just really working on pushing turnout, because that is, it's going to be key here.
No doubt about it. And again, it's hard to preach joy when you're looking at someone and go, feel the joy, feel it, feel it.
Yeah.
That can be a little difficult to do. And ultimately, you should probably take joy in things other than who's running for president. You should probably take joy in, I don't know, your family and your faith and the giver
Jesus.
of joy, perhaps. If you find joy, like sustaining joy in a politician, I have questions for you, and I would like them answered.
Is feeling the joy kind of like feeling the burn?
A little. And in this case, you're probably, yeah, it's about the same. A lot's going on. A lot's going to happen. It's August 23rd. Election day is barreling down on us faster than you can imagine, as my daughter made her appearance in the most perfect way possible on the show today. It is a race that is going to, we hear every election is the most important election of our lifetime. Kamala Harris last night posited that this is the most important election in the history of our nation. I have my questions on that, but it is important, and it's important for you to get involved. And so if you want to get involved in the work we're doing at Palmetto Family, visit palmettofamily.org. We will link you, and we will help you get to the place to make sure you are A, registered to vote, and that you B, know where to vote, and that you know when you can vote, because you don't get an award for voting on election day. You can vote early, even in our state, and you can do it securely and safely, and it is not rife with, you know, everything you hear about nationally. But we have all of that. We have every show you could ever want on our YouTube page, on our Facebook page. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all of them, X. By the way, our shows are going to be moving over to X as a platform very soon as well. That way you can follow us there at Palmetto Family and get our shows there. And we will continue to stay close on this race, because it is very important who's the president of the United States. And we will look at some local races as well. We'll continue our leadership conversations. If you missed our first one with Congressman Ralph Norman, Dr. Steve Pettit had a great interview with him. Go back and watch that on our Facebook page, or listen to it on our podcast feed. Do that there. And again, you could subscribe to the show on every platform. That's free. We don't charge you. Just get that and click the notification. That way you can get notified whenever we go live. For Randy Page, for Mitch Prosser, I'm Justin Hall. Thank you so much for listening to the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. This one has been the Palmetto Family Matters Show.